Hey, what's up? This is Uncovering the Seniors. I'm not Jan, I'm not Jon Arne, I'm Tomo. Actually, I drugged Jan and Jon Arne, I put some heavy sleeping pills into their matcha teas, and now they are sound asleep in the closet, and that buys me time to plunge into their computers, steal their passwords, so I can deliver to you this enlightening message. I will be from time to time releasing content on the Uncovering the Seniors platform. This will be talks, conversations, never before released recordings from the angels of music. Today we're gonna kick off strong, cause today's episode is William Parker and Hamid Drake talking. This conversation was recorded back in 2017 during Freedom Music Festival. It was a festival that I was organizing. It seems that it's dead now, but who the fuck knows, maybe it's going to be resurrected at some point. I don't know, I have two kids, I don't know anything. This artist talk was recorded on the late, very hot August day at Insula Music, a legendary record store in Copenhagen that is no more. They talked for nearly an hour. Five people in the audience reached the ultimate goal of enlightenment. And after that, William and Hamid went to Concertkirchen, a concert venue, which is a church, which was de-Jesusized. They played for nearly 75 minutes, and another 23 people had Kundalini awakening. So this stuff is powerful, but you definitely should listen to it. Oh, and one more thing. The fragments of music that you hear come from that very concert that William and Hamid gave during Freedom Music Festival, and it was mixed by Jon Lipscomb. Also, the quality of the talk is what it is. It was a field recording kind of thing. So please don't be like, "Oh, I wish it sounded better. I wish it was like HD kind of thing." Because it is what it is. But the message is what counts. So let's do it. Enjoy. This is William Parker and Hamid Drake.
When you speak of freedom, you're really talking of freedom of choice. And that is choosing to walk the way you want to walk, and to talk and say things that you think are important, to dress the way you want to dress, to live the way you want to live, in accordance to the natural, the way the natural forces in the universe move. If you can live, you know, corporations think they're free because they just do what they want to do, and the end result of everything they do may be against the natural forces of the universe, and their goal is to be free to make as much money as they want to make, and they might call that freedom, but And what we do, what musicians do, who talk about freedom, is that they're free to do their calling or their destiny path of how they think they're supposed to be living, what song they're supposed to sing, and what's going to be coming through them as conduits of freedom.
So I would have to say that I agree with William, you know, very much. But also, for me, freedom in a very personal way, also deals with dealing with one's own fears, you know, and still seeing them, realizing them, and still having, somehow having the whatever it takes, the gumption, the oomph, to do a particular thing, even regardless of that fear. And it brings me back to the second time that I played in Denmark. It was with I'd come here to play with a group called the New Jungle Orchestra, you know, and this was a very important marker in my. In my development, kind of, and
when was it?
This was 80 something, something like that. I had come here once before with a group called Mandingo Griot Society, but I met Pierre and Irene in upstate New York, in Woodstock, a place called the Creative Music Studio, that had been founded by various musicians, Ornette Coleman, Don Cherry. Jack DeJohnette, Dave Holland, a bunch of different folks, you know, Carl Berger, Nana Vasconcellos. And so their percussionist, Marilyn Mazur, she had been called to play with Miles Davis at the time. So Pierre, he got in touch with me, and he asked me if I could come and do this tour with them. And so I eagerly said yes. But once I got here, I think I didn't quite realize what I'd gotten involved in, you know. And so I was struck by this fear, you know. I don't know if it was because of the music or I'm not sure what it was, but I knew it had something to do around the process of creativity, you know. And I started feeling that I wasn't prepared for the tour or the music, you know. And so... it's very much like how I am. It's very unlike, I mean, how I am today, but that was another time. And so I was ready to go back to Chicago. I told Pierre that, and I said, man, I can't do this. And so he was very cool about it. He said, oh, let's, because they live close to some woods, you know, in Gentofte. He said, well, let's go for a walk, you know. And so I expressed to him, I openly expressed to him what my fears were about this project, you know, and he just listened. He's like, oh, okay. And in his own way, he kind of let me know that everything was okay, you know, everything was cool. Because the music, some of it, stylistically, some of it I was familiar with. But on a certain level, there are some aspects of it that I really wasn't that familiar with. And also being able to, because we're playing a lot of composed music, and being able to get the music in the short amount of time that we had before the tour started, I was struck down. But he was able in his own way to convince me that everything was cool. And then I realized that regardless of the fear that I was facing, this was something that I had to do. You know, I had to rise above this regardless of the situation and still try and give it my very best. So for me, it was, I didn't allow myself to be trapped in a place of not being free. You know, if I had gone back to Chicago, I would have become a victim, almost a slave to my own fear in the moment. And so that allowed me to really be free within my own self, you know, and which allowed me to be free in the music. And so I stayed, and I have to say it was probably, it marked a beginning of something for me that I like to call the courage to create, you know. And it, then later on, because many musicians don't talk about this fear that they have in the process of creation, of creating something. I mean, everybody gets like nervous and stuff like that before they play, and we show it in different ways. But I found that many musicians don't talk about it much. But I was forced into a position to speak about this. And so then afterwards, when I went back home, I found a book called The Courage to Create by this psychologist, Rollo May. And he talks about that process that we actually biochemically go through within our physical body, you know, when we're about to embark on this process of creation. You know, the feeling that we get here, and then how the mind starts to play tricks, you know, with us also, and starts to tell us that you can't do this, you know, you're not, who do you think you are, you know. And so that was a freedom suite for me, you know. And then it enabled me to and personally I still get that feeling always before I play, but now it's like if I don't get it, it's like I worry, you know, because I feel that perhaps I'm thinking too much of myself. I'm not allowing myself to be into that spontaneous moment of the unknown, which I think the greatest freedom lies, you know, and it can allow us to go into territories that we perhaps might not go into. So on a personal note, for me, freedom deals a lot with one facing their own fears and trying to go beyond them regardless, you know, and then taking that into whatever creative process we're involved in, whether it's music, whether it's writing, you know, whether it's sports, it doesn't matter the vehicle, you know, but the process that we go through, and I think it's a continual process of discovering freedom. It's not just... I feel it's not just a one-time thing, but it's a continual thing. It's a continual process of growth and development, you know, and facing those challenges that are going to come upon us all the time, and often at times that we wouldn't even expect, you know. So.
Well, you know, part of it is like having your eyes closed, and someone spins you around and then pushes you out and you end up somewhere. And you don't know exactly how you got there. And it's not even really you, because you say, well, I wouldn't have had the strength to go out into the dark. I don't like the dark. You know, I sleep with the lights on at night. But I like the unknown. Because for some reason, the known I didn't like, but I love the unknown. Now, I don't know why, but I very much like the unresolved phrase, or the place where I didn't know where I was going. And that was a great kind of marking point or a step for me. And then you have people along the way who you constantly meet, and I was meeting people all the time. You know, I mean, I was very lucky, and I don't know why I met them, except I'd come from the Bronx, New York, and I used to walk from the Bronx down to Manhattan with my bass on my back. It was a long walk, and I get there, because I said to myself, you know, okay, I'm going to go downtown, and I'm going to find the Reverend Frank Wright and Noah Howard. And I just took my bass, and I ran into Frank Wright, you know, and he immediately starts calling me baby brother and all of this. And the next day, I'm walking down the street on LaGuardia Place, and I'm just standing there. And Don Cherry comes up behind me, and he's playing this instrument called the Dusangoni. This is 1974, and so we just start talking, and then I pull out this bunch of poems. So I'm reading the poems. He's playing the Dusangoni. We start talking. He's living up at the Chelsea Hotel, and me and him walk up there to the Chelsea Hotel, and we're just talking, talking, talking. talking, and then stayed up there all, like, for hours. Then I come back, and then when I left, he said, by the way, what do? So I said, I'm a musician, I play bass. He said, well, I'm playing at the Five Spot soon. Why don't you come down and play the week with me? Now, he didn't know what I sounded like. He didn't know whether I could play or not play. But he just said, come down, play at the Five Spot. And so I came down, and I got there the day of the gig, and he showed me some things. And he said, okay, we'll see you tonight. Bam. And then, so every day, you know, whether I was meeting Gratian Monaco III, Dave Burrell, Wilbur Ware, Archie Shepp, it was like, it was an all-star cast. And I learned from these people and was inspired that it was okay to be me. You know, when they were doing little things that were a little hanky-panky. Hanky-panky is like being a little naughty. And I said, well, no, I don't do that. Then they knew that, you know, they were passing things around. And they said, well, no, don't give it to him. He doesn't do it, you know. And they just skipped over me. They allowed me to be myself, you know. And that was great, which allowed me, when I dealt with people, to be themselves. And that was the way to go. Then you know, you read about Duke Ellington. You know, my father took me to Duke Ellington's funeral because my father was a big Duke Ellington fan. And so you learn about people's characters. They said, well, Train would let people sit in. And whenever you saw John Coltrane, he would be uplifting. I was in the Bronx. I met John Gilmore and Marshall Allen in the Bronx. And the first time I met them, they treated me like I was their equal. You know, they didn't look down on me. Coming again, you know, they said, well, you know, come back again. I'm learning a lot from you. And I said, wow, they're learning a lot from me. So anyway, there's all of these pivotal points. Everybody has them. Musician, non-musician, everybody has them, and everybody kind of, learns and develops that way. You know, good luck, bad luck, you know, great things, things that aren't so great, it's all part of your process.
I feel that every day you're meeting people, you know, and music is one thing. But it's only one thing. I mean, we're here because of music, but music is just one thing in this whole vast creation of life. You know, so every day we're meeting people, and some of them we feel that there's something there for us to learn and share. Others we might feel differently. It depends on where you're at in that moment. It depends on your conditioning. You know, I mean, I've met musicians that that I felt that there wasn't so much for me to learn from them because I had listened to what other people said about these musicians, you know, and I found that to be incorrect. You know, I think For me, the important thing is to realize that in this process of life that William was talking about, we're in a state of growth and development, and there's no end, but we can continue to refine ourselves. You know, some of my greatest teachers have been non-musicians per se. You know, I would say one of my most prominent and important instructors in music for me was a visual artist, you know. And from him,
who was
it? His name was Eric Evans. You know, we both used to work at this place in Chicago called the Baha'i Temple, you know. and we did this job together, but it gave us ample time and opportunity to talk. He was also a martial artist. He was a second degree black belt in Shorei Goju Karate, you know. So he had a deep awareness of what it means to be in the body, you know. And I think essentially when we play music, a certain aspect of it deals with us being, you know, in the body, you know, and relating to, you know, the functioning of our body. You play drum set, you're dealing with four limbs, you know, so it's very particular. And so he was a person that really, he guided me in a certain way. He started talking about the principles that govern visual arts and was relating that to what he felt music was about, you know, and I'd never heard music spoken about from that perspective before. So he gave me a lot of valuable information. You know, so I think this world is filled with teachers of various sorts. Some call themselves teachers, you know, some just look at themselves as just, you know, they're just beings, you know. And all beings go through similar processes, no matter what they do, you know. And there's something for us to learn from everyone, if we have the like you said, reception, you know, if we're receptive to it, and hopefully, our antennas are tuned enough to such a degree where we can be receptive to all the things that are going on around us, because there's a lot to learn in a very short span of time. We're not here for a long time, you know, like that, it's over. You know, and so, I mean, I think about, okay, all these things, how can I apply to music? I mean, Don Cherry was that way, you know. Spent a lot of time with Don Cherry. He was that type of person. And many other great artists that William was talking about, they're that way, you know. And I think for some of them, the hanky-panky that William was speaking about aided them, you know. And for some, it didn't quite so much, you know. I mean, in the United States or throughout the world, there was a whole psychedelic movement that was going on at one time that it had its advantages and disadvantages, you know. That psychedelic movement created this amazing being named Ram Dass, you know, Dr. Richard Alpert, who opened up a whole generation of people to, you know, meditation and alternative ways of living, alternative ways of eating, alternative ways of being. He introduced, he was responsible for spreading the whole teachings and philosophy of all the various yogas, Hatha Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, all these things that have helped people in many ways and continue to. So I think it's a matter of just having the blessing of being open and recognizing that, first of all, that you as a being, you're as vast as space, you know, and the only limitation that we have is that which we place upon ourselves, you know, and so we pray to keep a mind that is open, that's vast, you know, that's creative. I think the nature of the mind is to be open, you know, but of course, you know, we go through various difficulties in our lives that sometimes make us, you know, close in. There's so many different things that inform, for me, that inform how I feel and about music and what I play. You know, and I just hope can stay in that realm of mind, you know, and maybe even grow more in that, where our capacity becomes even more vast. You know, because we have a lot to do. It's like this button from the Vision Festival in New York. It says, "Artists for a Free World." So that can mean a lot of different things to different people. You know, and so we all have to think about what that means for each of us. You know, first of all, we're all artists. Everybody, you know, is an artist. You know, and we would all like to live in a free world. But what does it mean to live in a free world? You know, because the world is pretty much today as it was yesterday, before yesterday, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. You know, we're still dealing with the same type of mentality of hatred, tyrants, you know, dictators of various levels, sickness, poverty, You know, the only thing now is that it's gotten worse in the sense that even if we stop the emissions from going off up here, global warming, I mean, the glaciers are still going to melt. So knowing those things, you know, what do we do? What do we do? You know, I mean, what are we going to do? So one of our last places of refuge is how we treat each other. It's how we treat each other as beings, as human beings. You know. And we hope that this music can be one of the vehicles by which a transformation can occur within the human being. And we start treating each other in that way, as human beings, as brothers and sisters, as cohabitants of this turtle, well, the Native Americans, they call it the United States Turtle Island, but as inhabitants of, you know, this place, this planet, you know. Mm-hmm. You know. So what do we do?
Because, you know, there is no global warming in the tone world. Okay? There's no war. There's no starvation. There's no hate. Mm. So that might be a place, one place people would like to go on a family vacation. Well, it's not only very simple. It's something that doesn't cost you any money.
Yeah.
It's something that everybody can do.
That's right.
You know, it's just a matter of making a choice. I said, well, you know, I could yell at this person, or I can talk to this person and communicate. You know, I can do something nice for this person, or I can do something the other thing. And you find whenever it's time to do something what you consider nice for someone, it doesn't cost you anything. Yeah. At the end, after you do it, you not only do you have more than what you started with, you have more than more. You have more and more.
Yeah, more and more.
Well, you know, music, it, you know, music is life, okay? Music is life. Music is in this world trying to get to the center of the universe without necessarily physically moving. And trying to figure out how to do that without trying to figure it out too much. Okay, so music is anything that's beautiful is music. See, music in the babies, like Archie Shepherd's got a tune, What the World Needs Now is a Baby Smile from Attica Blues. You see music in the flowers. You see music in the mountains and the trees. You see music in the birds that are flying. We have a tune, one of the tunes we do, and the lyrics are, bird is poem in the sky. So you have all these poems in the sky. They're called birds. You just have to look at them. So it's all around you. You don't have to look at it. Then you say, wait a second. My next door neighbor is beautiful. A 98-year-old man. Not a model. Okay, but and the little kids down the block are beautiful, and my grandma's beautiful, and this guy's been. And then after a while, you say everybody in this room is beautiful. You say, "Wow, I have no excuse, because everybody's beautiful." You know, so it's really just accepting of this beauty, and that's what music is. And then and sometimes with people, it manifests itself as sound, as painting, as writing, as cooking, as just going to work and coming home, and being a father or uncle. That's all music. Everything you do in life is music. Okay, you have the choice to do it one way or the other way. And so that's kind of a beginning definition of you could look at music. And you could go on and on to find it until you get a big book like this and say, wow, music is all of this stuff. You know? That's why, you know, Juma Santos, the percussionist, he died, you know, a couple of years ago. But he used to call, you know, he would say, my yams are tired. And he called feet yams.
Okay.
Because if you've worked in the fields and your feet in the soil, after a while, your feet will look like sweet potatoes. And then, so he was on, you know, so you begin to find little things where you're looking at things differently and you're seeing beauty everywhere you go. You know, you look to your left, there's beauty, to your right. And you spend a whole day just like, wow, yeah. You know, and just learning and absorbing and taking in. And once that door's open, it's open. The window's open. It comes through. And you just have, and that's all music. It's all music. It's all music. And that's why you can be deaf. You can be blind. You don't have to be able to speak. And it's all music. It comes through.
I remember being on the tour with Don Cherry, you know, and he said something, what I felt at the time was very profound, and I still feel it's just that way. You know, as I've gotten older, I feel it's become even more profound. And he said that style can become the death of creativity. You know, if you feel or conceive one style to be greater than any other style. You know, I think these different musical genres are like just different people, you know. Some folks are drawn to them, you know. Some people are drawn like just to listening to different, what we might call different types of music. You know, you're drawn to listening to different types of music. Some people are drawn to to playing different types of music. Personally, I never actually sought out playing different types of music. You know, I've been around different types of music most of my whole life. You know, so it just felt kind of natural to do that. You know, a drum is a drum is a drum is a drum. You know, it's my main instrument. It's drum, different types of drum, and a drum is a drum. Black Elk, Chief Black Elk said, the drum is the heartbeat of the universe. You know, he was the chief of one of the chiefs of the Oglala Sioux Nation. So I think it's natural to for the type of character that I am to do that. I know some musicians who don't prefer that, you know, and it's okay, it's fine. It really doesn't matter, to tell you the truth. You know, it's just if it's something that you're drawn towards, you know, you do. I mean, I like the sound also of other languages. I don't speak other languages, but I do enjoy the sound, you know. At times, it is a challenge also for me as a percussionist to play other styles of music. Some of them I find very challenging. You know, and at times I have to go into a type of study about them, especially, well, there's one thing that I find that right now in my musical development, I'm finding that I have to be more studious about, and as far as playing other types of music, and that's shifting to different meters, time signatures, you know, and not shifting when I might necessarily want to shift, but shifting when the music at hand asks me to shift and then come back, you know, because I find that working with, it's a challenge for drums in a sense because, like I said earlier, you're working with four limbs, you know, so developing that type of independence with my instrument, you know, to... You know, you kind of split yourself in half to be able to do that. But as far as different genres of music, whether it be like African music, reggae, what we call jazz, you know, improvised music, whatever the titles are we give to these things. I think for the type of characters that we are, it's just a natural phase or a natural part of what you simply do. You know, so personally, I don't look at them as being very different, you know, because they don't feel different to me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't feel different. Since I feel that we're vast, then all of that is residing inside of me anyway. You know, sometimes I just have to find the right key to open a particular door, you know, to that particular thing. But I feel I look at it from a place of oneness, you know. So, and there's other artists who don't, you know. For some, it's difficult, you know, and they choose not to pursue that, which is fine. It's good, you know. It's okay.
Just to add to, you know, because there's one thing that we all have in common, and there's several things we all have in common, but one of the things is that the heartbeat. You know, no matter what country you come from or what language you speak, you have the heartbeat. We have the heartbeat. The other two things we have is that we cry in the same language, okay? And we laugh in the same language. So the heartbeat, the laugh, and the cry are the things, some of the things that connect us, no matter where we come from. Mm-hmm. You know, if you went to go to the hospital and you say, the babies are crying, oh, well, that baby is Russian, because he has a Russian. No, that baby's Japanese. You know, and as you watch the kids, you'll see that they all laugh and they all play the same games and they all do the same things. No matter what country they come from, there's a connectivity to these basic things. And the same is true. If you get past your blocks about music, you'll see that you after a while, style or... you know, or genre doesn't really exist, especially if you don't know anything about it. You know, people say, well, you were playing, you know, years ago. And I first started to say, well, now you were playing the Italian method of bowing. And I said, I was. And I said, I didn't know about, So not knowing about something really can be an advantage. You know, as long as you don't panic when you find that you're walking on water and you don't know how to swim.
I can give you a perspective on pulse and rhythm, you know, just from, a very sort of academic, percussive drummer's perspective of pulse and time, you know, and how those two things, you know, how it converges in relationship to melody, you know. But I don't think that's the answer, you know, you're actually looking for. I mean, I could give you a perspective on, you know, how, you know, two against, you know, three relates, you know, and you put something on top of that that might be different. You know, but that's like, you know, I think it's different for, I can go on and on with those types of combinations, you know. You know, how you have all of these, you know, different, you know, perspectives going, things going this way and things going that way, you know. Most of the time, it either goes like this or it goes like that. But when they're both happening simultaneously, something else happens, you know. But it's all, that's exactly all it is perspective, you know, and perspectives change. And it depends upon, you know, the person doing it. You and I could be playing together, we could be doing a composition, and we could both have entirely different perspectives on it. And I think that's part of the beauty of it. You know, we don't have to agree. You know, we don't have to have the same perspective. You know, your perspective is uniquely yours. You know, mine is mine. The beauty is that we can come together and try and do something. You know, and try and create something. You know, another perspective is there is only rhythm and melody, and harmony comes out of that, you know. But there's zillions of perspectives, you know. I mean, and if you look into the music of the Mbuti people, the Pygmies, for instance, you're going to find a whole other perspective. You talk to the Ganawas in Morocco, you're going to find another perspective. If you had the chance to speak with Stravinsky, you would find another perspective. You know, you speak with Tomo, you're going to get another perspective. You know, and but that's all it is a perspective. You know, it's just a concept. You know, and when you're in, like William was saying, the tone world, when you're in the place of timeless awareness, open space, perspective is the furthest thing away from the furthest thing of the furthest thing of anything. You know what I mean? Because your mind is not even functioning from that perspective anymore. You know, it's like, you know, if you've ever, well, okay, just to make it physical and human, you know, people talk about good and bad orgasms, right? Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody knows that, you know, but it's like, okay, if there's someone that you love, you know, you really love, and the two of you are like connecting on this really deep level, you know, it seems like every time you come together in that way, it's wonderful. That's the perspective you have. It's like, it's wonderful. There's this illumination, this enlightening sort of feeling that comes about. You've been taken out of your body, you know. The moment the two of you start to argue and you disagree with each other and the relationship starts to fall apart, your perspective, even in that most intimate of ways, is different. Am I right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that. I mean, to me, that's how perspective is. It's like it depends, you know, on the time, place, and circumstance, you know, and it's going to always change. It's going to always change because you're going to be changing. You're changing. You're growing. You're developing. So your perspective is going to change. Your perspective on pulse is going to change. Your perspective on rhythm is going to change. You know, I used to have, when I was pretty intensely studying like music from India, tabla, man, I had so many perspectives on rhythm. I thought I was a rhythmatologist, you know. So many perspectives on rhythm because this system was blowing my mind. But after a while, I realized that, whoa, you know, really all they're talking about is the one. You know, the sum, they call it the sum. It's the one. It's the one. One. That's all. And then it's pretty soon it's not even that anymore. You know. So,
I mean, I played with many drummers. I used to play with a drummer called Ed Blackwell. And I played with a drummer called Billy Higgins, and they were complete opposites. You know, Blackwell would practice all day, drum books. Billy Higgins didn't read it, didn't read music. See, now, and they both could play, and they both did their thing, and they both had an idea of how something was done. And that's how it's going to be. You know, for every musician, is going to have a different concept of everything. I think one of the ideas is, as Pierre said, acceptance of the mysteries. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You see, through acceptance of the mystery piece, and only through peace can we accept the mystery. Kenneth Patchen. Now, so it's kind of like that, and once you accept the mystery, all the questions go away. You know, all you're not interested in questions, nor are you interested in answers. Mm-hmm. Questions and answers vanish. Thoughts vanish. You just become pure sound, silence, rhythm, harmony.
We can't really even name it.
You know. You become nothing. And becoming nothing, you become everything. Milford Graves, nothing one, nothing two, nothing three, nothing four. Mm-hmm. ESP Records, check that out.
So that's that. Wow. If you felt the prana rising up your spine and ejaculating on the crown of your head, please drop me a message at tomojakobson@gmail.com or write whatever the fuck you want. I enjoyed this and I'm happy and excited for more. So please listen to this podcast and enjoy your sweet, sweet life. Thank you.